We've come finally to this last chapter of this epic book. Paul finally makes it to the city of dreams. It's been his goal for so long. He's had so many setbacks. It's been an incredible distance that he's been. One scholar actually calculated how much Paul had traveled in his life, and he reckoned he had traveled almost 25,000 kilometers during his 35 years of ministry. 25,000 kilometers. And of that, 14,000 kilometers were on foot. That's like walking the entire length of Ireland, right from top to bottom, 30 times. And then, of course, the shipwreck in Malta that we saw last week from the previous chapter. The man must have been absolutely exhausted as he made his final leg to Rome. Now, as it happens, we're only going to focus on verses 11 to 16 this morning, because there's just enough there, frankly. And I think the big point that Luke wants to make in this section is the vital blessing of Christian, genuine Christian fellowship. That amid all the trials and exhausting experiences of life and ministry, we need this vital blessing of genuine Christian fellowship. We see the reality of it in these verses. We see the priority of it in these verses. It is a unique blessing. It's one that we all need. And it's one that we all need, of course, given that our goal as Christians, like Paul and the others, is to make Christ known. And that's a hard thing to do. We've seen that the whole way through this book. We've seen the pressures, the opposition. Even here, you know, they're sailing on a boat with the figurehead of these twin gods, just contradicting everything that they want to preach and share. They're under the shadow of that, even as they sail on that final stretch. And then, you know, he finally makes it. They make it to Rome. And, you know, verse 22, it says, "We know that people everywhere are talking against this sect." You know, given the opposition that Paul and company experience on their missionary travels, it's no surprise that Luke spends a real focus here, he gives real attention in verses 11 to 16 on Christian fellowship, because we need it. When they got to, I don't know how you pronounce it, Puteoli, when they got there, which was still 125 miles from Rome, but it was in the vicinity of Rome, see what Luke says. He says, "We found some brothers who invited us to spend a week with them." A week? Now bear in mind that these brothers would have been completely new to Paul. Paul had never been to Italy. He had travelled widely, but this was his first time to Italy. He had not planted the church in Rome. We actually have no idea who first took the gospel to Rome. We don't know who planted the church in Rome. What we do know is that some of the Jews who were in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost, right back in, you know, when you read in Acts chapter 2, there were people there from all over the world. Some of them were from Rome. So maybe some of those guys, maybe some of the crowd that day from Pentecost went back home and took the gospel with them, having been converted. We just don't know. But Paul knows that there's a church there. Paul has already written his letter to the Romans by this stage. And of course, that's the very next book in your Bible. Romans has already been written, and he is so excited to get there and to meet his fellow believers in Rome. Luke says, "We found some brothers." And he doesn't say, "We found some welcoming and generous people like they found on the island of Malta." He says, "We found brothers. They've never met, but they have immediate affinity. More than that, they have an immediate bond. They're not simply friends, they're brothers, they're family. They're strangers, and yet they're not strangers. They're family. And they take time to spend a week together, just like that." Now, we might say a couple of days is pretty generous, especially if you're hosting people you've never met before. But Paul and company are invited for a week. I wonder, we're not told, I wish Luke had told us a wee bit more, because I wonder what Julius the centurion, the commander, would have thought of all this, you know. I mean, who are these guys? You know, they maybe looked a world apart from this prisoner under his command from Tarsus. They probably looked different, probably had a different accent. You know, they were a mix of ages, perhaps, maybe from various social backgrounds. Who are these people? And how in the world have they this bond with Paul, whom they've never met? Julius must have been amazed. Had he ever seen anything like the Christian church? I wonder if it struck him that what Paul and his fellow companions in the faith had, if what they had was so incomparable with what everyone else on that journey had. You know, like all the men on who would have prayed to those twin gods represented on the ship, Castor and Pollux. Did Julius, did he see the same commitment to one another among all who would have prayed to them? Did he see the men who prayed to those gods having the same kind of transcultural bond and fellowship that Paul and his fellow Christians had? Did he see those men having the same joy and peace as what Paul and company had? Surely it was a very notable difference. And Julius, the Roman centurion, must have thought, what is going on? A week's stay, and we're not sure if he was there too. I mean, he had to let it happen. Maybe he had business to attend to or something. But he let it happen. And he must have thought, well, they've got something going on that I don't understand. Now, if you're on a journey and it's been a crazy long journey and you're nearly there, you might think, well, let's press on, you know. I don't know these people anyway, so let's just keep moving. But that was not Paul's attitude. Paul, and we know that Luke was with him, and Aristarchus, another believer, they had a clear priority. And their priority was to be together as brothers in the Lord. They had an opportunity for Christian fellowship, and they seized it. Scottish pastor Alistair Begg, whom I quoted not that long ago, he ministers in the US, he said this: the gathering of God's people is a priority. It will always be a priority for God's child in touch with God's Son. He said, you may lay it down as a maxim that you and I are able to go to another community without, as a priority, seeking out the companionship of others who love Jesus. It is an indication of the cooling of our affections for Jesus. Conversely, if we have a genuine desire to do what Hebrews 10:25 says, to not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, the author says, but to encourage one another, and all the more as we see the day approaching, if that is our genuine desire, well, then that is an indication of our love for Jesus. Indeed, our growing love for Jesus. And the person who says, no, don't worry, I genuinely love Jesus, I just don't care to make it a priority to be with fellow believers week by week, that's not really on my agenda, let alone near the top, that person is really deceiving themselves. Really deceiving themselves. Now, please note, I'm talking about the heart here. You might not be much in fellowship with other believers for reasons that God knows and understands. And they may be good reasons, and God knows, nevertheless, that you really want to be, if you could be. That's what love for Jesus does. It makes you want genuine Christian fellowship as a priority. Conversely, you might be present every week in church out of mere tradition or habit, and yet really not care who else is there or not there, because you've no real thought or desire to move towards your fellow believers in love and commitment with a view to encouraging them in the faith. So the issue is not who's here and who's not here. That's not the issue. That may not tell us very much at all, because only God knows the heart. Nor is the issue, you know, who thinks church is great and who thinks it really isn't. For again, that may not tell us very much. You know, people may like the church for pretty lousy reasons, and they may be really frustrated with church for very good reasons. The issue is this, and it's a heart issue. Do we prize And do we value and treasure genuine Christian fellowship as a priority in our lives? One of the lovely, lovely things about our fellowship here is the great number of people whom we get visiting. Week by week, I'm not sure this morning if we've anyone visiting, but we very often do. They're maybe here on holiday just for the weekend, or maybe they're here on a work trip for maybe a bit longer and they're away from home. And they have a load of other things they could be doing on a Sunday morning, but they check the web and they look for a church and they find us pretty easily, and they choose to get up and come along. Now, why do they do that? Why not have a longer breakfast? Why not go for a walk on the beach or read the paper or go for coffee or prepare whatever work I'm sure they have to do? Most often, it's because they are fellow believers who want to meet and encourage other fellow believers and to be encouraged in their faith. In November, it's just a real joy that I get emails like this, and you wouldn't always know it, but because you don't receive them. Sometimes I forward them to a few people, but in November we had a guy turn up called Steve, and he was on a work trip working for Hilton Hotels. He didn't have a car. Somehow he got himself here. He had never been before. He had no connection with our church. He didn't know anyone, but he came. And a few days later, he wrote to me and he said, "It was such a treat." It was Malahide, and said, "It was such a treat to worship with you this morning, as I truly felt I was among the family of God." He said, "Should my travels bring me anywhere close to Dublin again, I will look forward to spending time in the faith with your congregation." Now, I don't share that to big everyone up, although it is encouraging, isn't it? But I share that as a great example of someone who seeks out Christian fellowship as a priority, as a challenge to us about what we would do if we found ourselves in Atlanta with work, without a car, and not knowing anyone. Will it be a priority to seek out others who love Jesus? Presumably it will be, if that is our priority here. Otherwise, I guess not. Our church not only gets a lot of people visiting, we also get a lot of people here with us for a few years, don't we? And then, sadly, they have to move on. We had to say goodbye last year to the Gornsons and to Gloria and to the Appletons in Hoth. But what a family we are part of, you know, that to know that like them, we can go to the States or to Ghana or to Malaysia or pretty much anywhere else on the planet and find family. Many of whom, maybe all of whom, we've never even met before. That's an extraordinary thing. I'll never forget my first week in Vancouver. I was there 2 years as a student. And apart from one other student I knew no one in the city. I was, of course, getting to know people at the college. But I went along to this little Presbyterian church in Vancouver. I had to get a bus there. But it really struck me that although I was brand new, I immediately, and I mean this within the first 5 minutes, it was kind of freaky. I immediately had a ready-made community of friends and family. It was incredible, truly incredible. And I felt it. And there's a lot to like about Vancouver, you know. There's it's a great city, mountains, ocean, every type of cuisine. I had a lot of fun for 2 years. But really and truly, a lot of it fades compared to the rich blessing of Christian fellowship that I enjoyed there for the 2 years. And it's been a privilege ever since, wherever I've been. You know, this past week I got another email from a couple called Anne and Norman. They were visiting us in Hope last week. They're from up north in Antrim. They were down for a few days, I think, to meet someone at Dublin Airport the following day. And they'd never been to our church before, as far as I'm aware. They didn't know any of us. But by their own admission as well, they weren't expecting much. I don't know why, but he wrote, "We anticipated a handful of old folk like ourselves. They still made it a priority to join us." I'd be very happy, by the way, if there was lots and lots of old folk. Not making an ageist comment at all. we need more. But, you know, these people didn't they didn't expect it was going to be any great encouragement to them. They still made it a priority to join us. They wanted Christian fellowship. Thankfully, he said it was the most unexpected and uplifting experience they had had for some time. That's what he wrote to me, I said. Now, I don't imagine everyone says that, of course, when they join us. But I made sure to write back and let them know that their fellowship and encouragement was deeply appreciated. And may we share that same desire that they had, you know, to encourage fellow believers wherever we find ourselves. Luke stays on the same point in verse 15. I mean, it's just said that, you know, these guys in Puteoli invited them for a week. And then he says in verse 15, that as Paul and co were coming, as we were coming into Rome, look who meets them. The brothers there in Rome, again, whom they've never met, had heard that we were coming, Luke says, and they traveled. The place names here, I had to do a bit of research. Some of them, they had gone 50 kilometers to the Three Taverns, which was on the road to Rome. They've gone 50, I mean, they didn't... Why? They're coming, you know. They don't need to go 50 kilometers to meet them. They're coming. But they do. They go 50 kilometers. And some of the brothers from Rome even went a further 16 kilometers to the market town called the Forum of Appius. So that's a long way that they've gone just to meet Paul and company. I'd have probably said, look, he's going to get here eventually. Just relax. But no. A number of them went all that way just to be able to walk him back with them into the city. And it must have been a pretty emotional experience for Paul, mustn't it? I mean, on the one hand, he was a prisoner, and Rome was well used to prisoners being, trooped into to the great city of Rome, probably behind a great army general and all his fanfare and all the prisoners from his victory at war behind him. Rome was well used to seeing prisoners entering into the city. But this was different. Because it must have been striking to Julius the centurion that the one entering Rome with great honor and welcome was actually the prisoner Paul. I mean, what's going on? He must have said that his fellow believers saw Paul as he truly was. Not merely a prisoner, but rather the honored ambassador of the King of Kings. And when Paul saw them, it says, just at the sight of them, when Paul saw them coming, the sheer sight of them caused him to thank God and be uplifted. Of course it did. But you know, we see here that Paul needed the church. You know, don't think only of how the church needed Paul. That's how we often think. Oh, well, Paul's great missionary, great apostle, and the church really needed him. Well, of course the church did, but the opposite is true. Paul needed them. Every servant of God, doesn't matter who you are, whether you're in the pulpit, whether you're in the pew, doesn't matter what role you have in church, every servant of God needs the people of God. I was learning a little bit about William Carey during the week. Carey is known as the father of modern missions. Carey ministered in India. He began in the latter part of the 1700s and continued into the 1800s in India. He discovered very quickly how much he needed and missed Christian fellowship. Because when he got to India, his friend and colleague there spent all the money they had, apparently, and then he abandoned Carey. And Carey wrote, "I'm in a strange land, alone, no Christian friend, a large family, and nothing to supply their wants." And he battled with depression, and you would. And at that time, he complained that he was spiritually cold and barren. He didn't feel close to the Lord. He lamented the coldness of his own heart, he said. He missed spending Sunday with other believers worshipping God. That was a big part of the aloneness. Carey's 5-year-old boy, Peter, contracted malaria and died. His wife, Dorothy, never recovered from her son's death. She became angry at her husband, apparently, because Peter died. You know, these were ordinary people with ordinary struggles and hurts and disappointments. And Carey was filled with sorrow. His first convert, apparently, did not come until he had labored for 7 years. And the point is that life is hard. And ministry is hard. And we need fellowship. Paul needed it. William Carey needed it. You and I need it. And may we demonstrate that need to our children. May they see in us the value that we place on genuine Christian fellowship, no matter what else is going on in our lives, so that one day, by the grace of God, when they're making their own choices in life, they're going to know what really matters. And as God would build us up through our fellowship together, may we in turn take every opportunity, like Paul, to share the good news of Jesus. We know from Paul's letter to the Philippians, which he wrote here from Rome, that the whole palace guard heard the gospel. This might be the end of the book of Acts, but it's really just the beginning. May God help and encourage us as we meet together week by week, so that we continue this ongoing story of making the good news of Jesus known to all. To him be the glory. Amen.